Hey, good morning, y'all. I'm Martha Norwalk. I'm still here. I'm really just fine. I just sound like a horsey horse today. Allergic reaction to blowing, and then talking for 6 hours yesterday and going back outside to work a dog and reacting to whatever's out there now that I'm reacting to that I don't really know what. But over the top of the hour in between love training and stuff, Beth and I figured out the Manuka honey drops that I'm going to get. that should help. But, it should be much better soon because I will have the rest of today and tomorrow, to rest my voice and stuff. And I think it just needs to work out of my system. But I now have made mental note, and hopefully I remember that next year when and any time I have to do any more blowing this year, I need to use a new N95 type mask, well fitting, because that was the mistake I made. The same thing happened in the the early summer or late spring when cottonwood came down. I blew without a mask, and I was like this for a while. Anyway, so I'm hanging in there, and we're here every Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon. On Alternative Talk, AM 1150. You can listen online or stream on your computer. And to pick up the stream, go directly to the 1150kknw.com website and click on Listen, upper left, Listen Online, and you'll be all set up to stream the show. And we are here with Merritt and Beth Clifton from animals24-7.org. It's our extra Sunday month in a five-Sunday month. And when we can, we spend it with them. But we didn't talk about and haven't said so, and because I know Beth caught at least one that I posted on Facebook. I'm kind of obsessed, and I'm obsessed with this dog pack that are making these doggy podcasts and posting them on Facebook, and it's like it's the best AI and tech. These guys are so creative, and I told you about it last week. The golden retriever and the French bulldog, at a table and microphones and headsets, and they're talking to each other. And
they're the main hosts of that podcast.
Yeah, they're the main hosts of this podcast. But now that I have been liking them and I shared one, they're all coming through my feed now. And holy moly, they're making all kinds of these doggy podcasts. I saw one with two dachshunds. It was, oh my gosh, it was incredible. And then sometimes the Goldie and the Frenchie have guest dogs on and interview them. And my gosh, whoever the humans are that are doing this, they are so creative. And they really know dogs because they're really good at talking for them. And they're hysterically funny. And I'll tell you what, I'm just in love with it. But what I did and what I posted is I want to know who's doing this because I want to get them on the air. Now, it could be a disaster like when the Jingle Cats, because when the Jingle Cats CDs first came out, oh, geez, it was probably... It was during Como. It came out while I was on Como. So they came out maybe 25 years ago. But anyway, when they did, Mike Spalla, the guy who created the Jingle Cats, sent me the tape and all of that, sent me all the CDs. And, they were absolutely outstanding, gave me permission to use them on the show and all that sort of stuff. And I wanted to hear his story of how he made them. So booked him for an interview on the show. Was one of those times where, back then at Como, mostly all we did was take phone calls, but every once in a while I'd interview somebody. But he got him on the air. And this incredibly creative guy and I knew the story of how he was creating because we'd talked off the air. But once I got him on the air, he wasn't talking anymore. And it was yes or no answers with nothing. And, and so I did my best through a segment talking with this guy and having and then during the break, I ran in to where it wasn't Nathan then. It was, my Como production engineer and my call screener at the time. What are we going to do? The guy won't talk. We just decided I just had to let him go. And that was it. So it could be the same thing, and maybe they wouldn't be good talking on radio, but assuming that they be also good at talking on the air, I'd love to talk to who's ever creating these podcasts. So it's the dog pack.
I'll trust that everything is okay because they're producing a podcast, not music. So they're definitely aligned with the whole aspect of being able to have conversations and speaking thoughts.
Yeah. So, you know, I want to know, is that like, is that a real golden retriever? And I mean, they look like real golden retriever in Frenchie. The dogs breeds all look like real dogs, but are they AI created? Or is that Goldie? Is that really one of their dogs? Is that Black Frenchie? Is that really one of their dogs? And then, and how do they, you know, then the coordinating the voices with their mouth movements and all of that. And how they, because maybe none of it's real at all. But now that I'm thinking about it, maybe I don't want to know that.
Well, there has to be some sort of real inspiration going into it.
Well, yeah. But anyway, so if anybody knows who's doing these dog-packed podcasts, tell them I want them on the air with me. So I want the humans on the air with me. It'll be fun to have the animals, too.
Martha, but if you like, I can look into it for you.
Hey, I'd love that.
Yeah, we can find that contact information. I'm sure they got it somewhere. You know, they always, I mean, many podcasts, they always have, you know, places where people can send in suggestions. So, I mean, we can easily go through that route or anything else that they might provide.
I don't know, since Merritt and Beth seem to know everything about the animal world, I think you ought to know who's making these podcasts. So, yeah, go ahead and see if you can find them. That'd be great. All right. So anyway, Merritt and Beth Clifton are here from animals24-7.org. We talked about all the bird stuff going on. And Merritt, every time I turn around and open my news feed, there's another dog attack. And it's usually family dogs. Now, recently, it's been family dogs attacking children, you know, babies, toddlers. You know, death is often, you know, part of the story. And, you know, I kind of have my sense of what's influencing all this sort of stuff. But why don't you, I think you're aware probably even more than I've been aware of. So what's going on with all this stuff?
Well, we're not even to the end of November now, and we already have tied the record for most dog attack fatalities in one year that was set only last year, breaking the record of only the year before. And we have also tied the record for most fatal pit bull attacks, which was set 2 years ago, and we have a month to go.
Wow.
Last three, which we're still working on the reportage of, some of them, the most horrific was the one where a little girl in Ohio was locked in a room with a misbehaving pit bull. The pit bull was put there because the pit bull was threatening to kill the other three pit bulls in the house. And the little girl was there, too, with the door locked. And, of course,
a child lock on it so she couldn't get out.
And her name
was... That just, I mean, why would that happen?
We're talking about a combination of bad dogs, bad parenting, lack of common sense, and both parents are now charged with second-degree murder of their little girl, Lachlan McGuire, who is only 2 weeks short of her third birthday.
What a horrendous situation to have to go through. I mean, sometimes you wonder, what are these people thinking?
The worst of it is,
apparently they're not thinking at all.
The same pit bull had torn her ear almost off. It had to be stitched on
2 weeks prior.
Right. And child protective.
You're kidding. So we had a dog bite on the child 2 weeks prior to this?
Dog.
Same dog, and Child Protective Services left the little girl in that home. It's just,
but it doesn't make any sense, does it, that they lock that this dog and the child in a room together, and they lock them in? I mean, how does that in anybody's world make sense?
They're facing second-degree murder charges, but to me, there's a certain measure of premeditation there. It really should be murder one. Anybody of good sense should have known what was going to happen.
They will be doing prison time, is my prediction.
Yeah, thanks. One would think that, just the devastating loss of losing a child that way would be,
I think
that would break most people.
the community more devastated than the parents, as far as I can tell. The parents, when they were hauled into the cop shop and interrogated, at least reportedly, the father wisecracked about, well, he thought he might be going to jail. Of course, he's going to jail. What the hell do
Yeah.
you think? But that wasn't the only one. On the very same day, a volunteer firefighter in North Carolina, a Meals on Wheels volunteer, was attacked by a loose pack of pit bulls. The cops are trying to trace down the owner and file charges. He was killed. And then 2 days later, a 23-year-old second-grade teacher in Tyler, Texas, who had volunteered to pet sit a friend's three pit bulls, was killed.
Who she was familiar with the dogs.
She
The
was
dogs had spent time with her.
so this is three fatal attacks and
Well, so this is a friend taking care of three
three dogs.
for the owner, and that she knew the dogs and so forth. So what happened in that case? Do you know the details? How it happened and under what circumstances?
We don't know anything more than what has been released, but the cops don't really know either because it was an unwitnessed attack. She was simply found dead on the premises
Oh, wow.
and badly mauled, of course. So this is going on often. This was number 57 by pit bulls this year, number 75 by dogs in this year in the United States, a couple more in Canada.
When you say number 57, you're saying 57 deaths by pit bulls in 1925, in
2025,
in 2025.
correct. And many more disfiguring attacks. We track that too. We've learned by comparing our data to Insurance Information Institute data that we only get one disfiguring attack in about 25, but we do get all the fatalities. So we can be pretty sure that we've got 100% of the fatalities, but maybe only one in 25 of the disfigurements, which run somewhere around 100 times as many as the fatalities.
Wow.
In the years that I've been tracking this from 1982 to the present, it has increased exponentially. There was a period of time, and we've now retrospectively backtracked it all the way back to 1833. From 1833 to 1982, the U.S. averaged less than one fatal dog attack per year. Nonetheless, pit bulls that entire time did lead the country in fatal dog attacks. The number started to go up in the 1980s, went up some more in the 90s, and in the 2000s has just exploded. The record for fatal dog attacks, all dog combined in the U.S., was still less than 10 as of 2000. And
Wow.
so it's completely out of control. And unfortunately, we just did a very extensive obituary for one of the guys that was, in our view, most responsible for this, a man named Eric Sakach, who was in the first half of his career a very distinguished investigator of dogfighting and cockfighting. In the second half of his career, he became a strong advocate for undoing breed-specific legislation and rehoming pit bulls from humane societies. I knew this guy. I wouldn't say I knew him particularly well, but I knew him in both parts of his career. His mother was also a distinguished humane worker who died at the age of 91. So I've been following this for a long time. I've been seeing how it evolved. And I believe it has evolved mainly because the humane community failed to step up and take responsibility for preventing it, even after many, many, many warnings.
All right. Okay, well, not a pleasant subject, but I do have something to say. I'd like to about all of this. But it's time to take care of advertisers. We're in the last hour of the show, so we need to keep Nathan happy. And I also need to keep my Robbie Golden Retriever happy. It was just too rainy and miserable. He usually stays outside while I do the show because he's happy there. But it's so disgustingly rainy. Even Robbie said, I don't want to stay out here. So he's been in with me and he's telling me, Mom, I have to pee. Okay? So I got to let Robbie out. Okay? In the meantime, while I do that, we're going to take care of advertisers. You all stay right where you are because Animal World continues. More with Merritt and Beth Clifton from animals24-7.org. Straight ahead, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
There is a horizontal world, and there is a vertical world. Living horizontally, our concerns are based in fear and survival. But then we hear a call to live vertically, to connect to our wholeness. Linda Rasmussen, with Vertical Energy, uses a process that helps you balance higher consciousness through your body. When you live vertically, you reap the benefits of health, peace, and clarity. For a free introductory session, call 206-841-1992.
Hi, this is Martha. Did you know that besides hosting Animal World, I'm also an animal behavior therapist and trainer with more than 40 years of professional experience? I work with you privately in your home or over the phone to help you understand your animal friends and resolve whatever behavior training or healing problems you've got going on. Most of my expertise is with cats and dogs, but I sometimes work with other types of animals as well. So whether it's puppies or kittens, adult dogs or cats, or elderly animal issues, I can help. Cats not using the litter box? Biting or scratching you or your furniture? Maybe they're fighting with each other or waking you up at night. I've got answers. Dogs barking too much, jumping or dragging you around the block on your walk? Does he have separation anxiety or chew up stuff he shouldn't? I've got answers. Whatever's going on with your animal friends, I will help you fix it. I am more than reasonably priced and often need to see you only once. I always do a free, no-obligation telephone evaluation, so give me a call and bug my voicemail if you need immediate attention. You'll find me at Martha's Canine, Feline, and All Creature Counseling at 360-217-7258. That's 360-217-7258, and I'd love to hear from you.
Walking your talk? Take us with you. The KKNW app makes streaming our programming easy on your phone or tablet.
Hey, y'all, I'm Martha Norwalk, and we are in the last hour of this week's edition of Animal World. We're here till noon, and every Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here in Alternative Talk. Have you just turned in? Yeah, I'm a horsey horse today, and that's an allergic reaction to blowing, and then doing a really long talking all day session yesterday, going out to work dogs outside, and I reacted to whatever's out there again. So hopefully... I will get through the rest of this hour, and then I will be able to rest my voice and order the Manuka honey drops that Beth has been telling me about. So let's see. We did hear from Linda Rasmussen. She's one of our neuroenergetic balancers. She does the best therapy and is here on the second Sundays of the month. She is local. She works out of the Intraspace facility in the old Rainier Brewery, so you can see her in person, or she can work with you remotely. And she offers a free session for anyone that contacts her that we send. And if she's worked with you on the air, that doesn't count. But it is for new clients that she hasn't worked with off the air before. So if you fall into that category, write down this number and call or text her for a free session. Be sure to tune in on the second Sunday of December for the next time she's on the air. So you can reach Linda at 206-841-1992, 206-841-1992. And of course, remember me, write down my phone number and please share it with anybody you know that has dogs that they're having problems with, and they need help resolving those problems, and they'd like to do it quickly. I'm their gal, and I always do a free telephone evaluation. I'll talk to you for free on the phone. So business is really down. I need to work. I got to get my voice back, but as soon as I have my voice back, I need to work. And I just love what I do, and it feeds me and fills me. And so send me some dogs to work with. Write down my number, pass it out, 360-217-7258. 360-217-7258. Okie dokie. So Merritt and Beth Clifton are here, animals24-7.org. And we've been talking about this, the incredible escalation of dogs attacking humans and killing. And then Merritt, of course, talking about keeping statistics for all of these decades and how it's just really been escalated in the 2000s. But then also we probably aren't seeing all the numbers we need to, because we hear about the deaths, but not necessarily all of the maulings and disfigurement and so forth. So there's a lot more that don't get into these statistics.
We track that, and we also track dog attacks on animals of all sorts, and we do break it down by breed as well and by species of animal attacked. With the fatalities, as mentioned before, we can pretty well track down all of those. But with the disfiguring injuries, we have to do an estimate based on comparing what we find with payouts by the insurance industry, which is tracked by the Insurance Information Institute. And with the attacks on animals, we don't even have much insurance industry data to go by. So we do have to use a projection basis. The basis I use for that is pretty much the same that's used to estimate the size of an iceberg. That's what you call an iceberg problem, where you see a small piece of an iceberg sticking up above the water and you can estimate the mass. It works pretty well. It's worked pretty well since the time of the Titanic to avoid future iceberg collisions. And nobody's come up with anything better to estimate dog attacks on animals. But using that math, we estimate that there are just under 10,000 fatal attacks on pets and livestock per year by dogs. Of which, since we've been tracking this since 2013, again, pit bulls seem to account for just about 90%, even though they're only about 5%, maybe 5.5% of all the dogs out there. And that's, by the way, counting all the different varieties of pit bull. There's many different names used for them.
Right.
American pit bull terrier, American bulldog, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
This is one
Staffordshire, Stafford, you know, Amstaff, yeah. American. Lots of different names. So obviously the occurrences and the number of bites and fatalities has been growing and just off the charts. I have to say that my perspective and my opinion about all of this is changing, has changed, is changing, and continues to change. One of the things that I've taught over the years and talk about is what I call the human to animal transference. So I say when our animals have problems, it isn't just the animals. Emotionally and intuitively, they are very sensitive. They pick up, process, and reflect back our belief systems, our behaviors, our characteristics, and particularly our suppressed negative emotional energy. So this happens much more obviously with cats than with dogs, but it happens with dogs too. And dogs lend themselves to training and behavior modification much easier than cats. So we can do a lot more about it with cats, and with dogs. And I don't necessarily have to talk to this about people a lot. But with cats, when I used to do so many cat cases, I'd have to work with the human behavior a lot in order to change the cats. All right. So, and then what I believe happens is that our domestic animals pick up and process and reflect back all this stuff from the owners or the people that live with them. Wildlife, tend to reflect the mass consciousness, the group thinking of the humans in their area. Now, when I'm teaching, I can tell you lots of stories to explain all of this and all that. We don't have time for that. But what I used to, you know, and like Merritt saying, pretty much they're all pit bulls. And so we have all this dump on pit bulls and they're bad and we should ban them and all that sort of stuff. And then you have all the pit bull advocates. And, you know, one of my favorite shows is Pit Bulls and Parolees. It's a fabulous show and the work that they do. And for all of pretty much I've been of the contention that really isn't the dogs. It's the humans that are, you know, and if we could fix the humans, dogs would be okay. And I could tell you cases of, you know, killer pit bulls that have been impounded, but then behind the scenes have been rehabbed and placed and have lived happily, gentle, loving lives. That, you know, mostly it's the people, not the dog. But I am seeing, I think, because of what I call this human to animal transference, the first thing that made my radar was not the pit bulls and all these attacks. What really crashed my radar in all of this is wild animal behavior, because it's changing. And the biggest example I can give you is coyote behavior. Used to be, I mean, we've been invading their habitat and they've been around with us. And for crying out loud, 50, 60 years ago, my mom was feeding the coyotes at Sandpoint Country Club. You know, when she went golfing, she carried a bag of dog food to feed them and all of that. And back when I lived around Bridal Trail State Park, the coyotes were all over the place. But my dog, Chowie Golden, got along with them. We'd ride through their territory. They'd come out and make a little pack with Chowie. He'd lead the pack, and I'd have a pack of coyotes riding with me and stuff. And then when I lived on the farm, they were easily intimidated. I had a cat that can run them off and all that. But now... And so I used to say, well, they're easy to intimidate and you just have to know what to do and you can deal with the coyotes. But their behavior is changing. You know, it's not just at night that they're out or dusk and dawn. They're hunting during the day. They're coming right now. They aren't just going after small domestic animals, cats and dogs and stuff. Kids are involved now, you know, and they're biting kids or dragging kids off. And, there's some cemeteries in Seattle that I know of friends that walk their dogs. They're scared to go there now because of the coyotes, and the coyotes are chasing them and their dogs out of the park. And one grabbed a foot of a dog when on the leash recently. Well, now we've got all this pit bull stuff, the attacks. I think because of the breed, if they bite, their jaws are so powerful and they are so capable of doing so much damage. It's a whole lot worse than if it's a toy poodle, you know, that bites you. But I think it's kind of relating to the mass consciousness with our wildlife, the mass consciousness, the human consciousness of us living with our animals. Think of the emotional atmosphere now. The mass consciousness is mad and angry and vindictive, and we're being, the powers that be are doing their best to divide and cause the division and the anger and all of that. And I think we're seeing the effects of that in our wildlife, but also now in our domestic animals and all this attack. So I think it has a whole lot to do. I think there's a whole lot we as a human consciousness can do to start shifting it back. But we have to stop the anger, the judgment, the blame, the criticism, the name calling, it's our way or the highway, because it's us humans.
I've got to point out on behalf of coyotes that in the entire recorded history of North America, there have only been two fatal attacks on humans. One was an attack on a baby in Glendale in California in 1981. Since that attack, there have been 760 Americans, just United States, killed by pit bulls, who are approximately as numerous at this point in time as are coyotes. The other was a young Canadian folk singer up at Cape Breton. And she had apparently been feeding the coyotes. The little girl's family had apparently also been feeding the coyotes. So they were habituating the coyotes to some extent to proximity. The increase, there is an increase, but the increase in coyote attacks, bites, et cetera, of humans is really relatively small. We're talking about a couple dozen incidents per year, up from it used to be there were very few of them reported. It may simply reflect an increase in human proximity again, moving out into their territory, them moving into our territory. But it's really not at all comparable to what's going on with domestic dogs in general, or pit bulls especially. Now, the other thing is, pit bulls have been selectively bred for more than 500 years to fight for baiting. They've been used as war dogs. Ancestral pit bulls were used to attack Native Americans. Columbus brought them over to intimidate the Native Americans he met in the New World. So they're already well known at that point to be very dangerous dogs. Now, what they're doing is really just what they have always done. There's been no real change in that behavior.
And the issue that I always bring up related to that, though, is that I do think God works in mysterious ways sometimes. And sometimes the most capable dogs of doing the most damage innately have the sweetest personalities and temperaments. But that's what I'm saying, you know, I'm shifting, but what I've always believed and seen for myself is that these pits are usually really sweet. They have great and nice personalities that, you know, but what Merritt is talking about is really important, because there's a genetic history apparently going back, hundreds of years with these dogs.
Now, the thing is,
and so that makes a difference when the powers come together or the energy comes together, that you push the wrong buttons, these dogs, they're capable of serious damage and killing. And I used to say it's not the dogs, it's the people. We shouldn't ban and all that sort of stuff. But now it's like the people are getting worse. We're getting angrier and more aggressive ourselves. We're doing more shooting and killing and all that sort of stuff. And it's filtering down to the animals. I think when you can't get the humans to cooperate, but you got to control the animals. It's really looking like there's something serious we need to be looking at here.
If you annoy your average dog, it gives you a warning. It growls, the ruff goes up. A German Shepherd is really good at giving warnings. And so we don't see a fraction of the number of attacks involving German Shepherds that we do involving pit bulls, because they give you every opportunity to get out of there, and they get out of there themselves if they can. They avoid the confrontation. But with the pit, it goes from 0 to 60. It goes from sweetness and repose to all-out attack and killing somebody very, very quickly. They were bred to not give a warning, because in a fighting pit, the dog that hesitates to give a warning is the dog that gets killed and doesn't pass along his genes.
Yeah, see, and that makes sense, because dogs, I'm always having to explain and teach people dog-to-dog relationships and how dogs correct each other and learn from each other with that. And with most domestic dogs, there's a sequence they go through before attacking. They freeze, they swing and snap, you know, they growl, swing and snap. And then the last stage is, you know, grabbing somebody and shaking and controlling the situation. What Merritt's describing is that pit bulls have been bred to not go through that sequence of communication, because it didn't make sense for what they were being bred to do.
I've seen a lot of street dogs in a lot of different parts of the world, and I've watched them for probably hundreds of hours, and I've never seen a serious fight among street dogs. They will snap at each other, they'll give you warnings, but then they will move away. They will never rolling on the ground.
It's just a warning, back off, I've had enough, quit bothering me.
It's been the same thing in India, Egypt, South America, Mexico. There's a sort of a universal avoid trouble dog language.
Right.
Pit bulls don't speak it.
Yeah, So obviously, the more discussion needs to go on about this. But at this point, I don't feel comfortable predicting some animals' behavior. I mean, with the coyote behavior is changing. Now it's in result or a direct result of what humans is going on and all of that. And I do think that the mass consciousness has to do with it. But I think you have to be more cautious these days. You got to be careful. And you got to know the area around you and what's going on. And you know, and it's not, you know, to scare people, you know, about pets and all of this, because the vast majority of them, I think, are very sweet and good. But it's the environment, especially, you know, when you get the pack mentality, when you have multiple dogs, that escalates the possibility of problems because of the pack nature. And but it is, it sounds like, Merritt, it is just the numbers are just ticking up, and it's just getting worse and worse. So somebody needs to be paying attention.
The primary problem is genetic.
Okay, now what about, do you find, are there certain areas of the country where there's more pit bull attack or dog attack type stuff than others?
Actually, we have looked at that quite a lot, and it really just closely follows the human population. It didn't always. Historically, pit bulls were a southern dog. You found dog fighting historically almost exclusively in the south, with just a few little pockets here and there in the north and the west. But as they've fanned out across the country, you really stick pins in the map and it just looks like the distribution of the human population, distribution of the human population, distribution of the dog population, pretty much exactly the same.
Okay.
But what I was going to say is, but it's exacerbated by having people that have these dogs with risk-taking behavior. It's exacerbated that they should not have these dogs. They're irresponsible in their own life. So you pair that with having a potentially very dangerous dog, and this is what happens.
I also need to mention every kind of dog has, unfortunately, way too many irresponsible owners.
Yeah.
There are lots and lots of bad dog owners of everything from Chihuahuas and Minpins right on up to Great Danes. But there's really only one type of dog that we see a lot of fatal and disfiguring attacks from, because the other dogs tend to have this avoidance behavior, and over time, dogs have evolved to be incredibly tolerant in most cases of human neglect, even human cruelty.
Yeah.
So there are other dogs, other types of dogs that are really almost as popular as the pits, but we don't see them. Like, we don't see the golden,
like the cane Corsos and some of these other mastiff type breeds.
But they're very closely related to pits.
Yeah.
But we don't see, like Irish setters. We have never had a fatality or a disfigurement to record from an Irish setter. Why? Well, they're apparently just a very good-natured dog. I've never had one. I can't testify from ownership, but I can testify for having kept the numbers for 43 years. That they just don't come up.
Yeah, so maybe we need a pit bull license. You know, like you get have to have a driver's license to drive a car. Maybe you need a license to drive a pit bull, because obviously it is if the humans were responsible and covering reasonably their side of the deal, you wouldn't have the problems, because it starts there anyway. We need to take care of advertisers before Nathan starts stomping around at us. Then we will come back and we will have more time with Merritt and Beth. Remember, it's animals24-7.org. Check it out and stay right where you are. Animal World continues right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Do you ever feel overwhelmed by all that's happening in the world? Triggered by people around you? What's going on in your personal life? Or shifting energies? Looking for inspired guidance? Need to talk? Natasha Ventner, intuitive personal awareness coach and medium, can help by sharing insights, tips, and tools to support you through life's glitches and snags. Natasha helps you empower yourself. Visit Natasha's website, intuitiveclarifications.com, to discover how her unique skills and heartfelt, caring approach can help you. That's intuitiveclarifications.com.
Hi, this is Martha Norwalk, host of Animal World, and I've got a question for you. Do you or anyone you know own a business, offer a service, or a product that does something good for animals, humans, or this planet? If the answer is yes, then I'd like to invite you to become a member of the Animal World family of advertisers. Lately, people are telling me they think radio advertising is exorbitantly expensive. Well, that can be true, but not on Animal World. Did you know that for as little as $45 a week, you can have two professionally written and produced commercials at no cost to you running on the show? You also get a link to your website on the homepage of the Animal World website and two live interviews on the show. Frankly, you can't afford not to do this. So if you'd like to join our great Animal World family of advertisers, or if you need more information, go to www.marthanorwalk.com to send me an email or call me at 360-217-7258. That's 360-217-7258. Come on, give me a call and join the family. We'd love to have you.
Would you like to access portals of possibilities for transformation, consciousness, expansion, and new experiences of health and well-being? Ancient knowledge and new science tell us that everything manifests from vibratory frequencies. Jude Ponton can assist you in shifting frequencies for personal health, aligning and balancing your energy or the energy of your home, property, or workspace. Jude can work with you remotely, office, or on-site if you live in the Seattle area. Jude can also teach classes in the Acutonic Sound Healing System. Check out whispering-dragon.com. That's whispering-dragon.com for descriptions of services. Or call 206-706-2836. That's 206-706-2836. You can even email resonate@whispering-dragon.com for information or to schedule sessions.
Some people know a good thing when they hear it. Alternative Talk 1150.
It's me, Horsey Martha. We are here till noon. Good thing, because my voice is about done, it seems like. Anyway, we heard from Natasha Venter, and I'm just going to check her out, intuitiveclarifications.com, and her YouTube channel, Natasha Venter IC, for her 4 o'clock podcast on Wednesday. Whispering Dragon, whispering-dragon.com, or call Jude at 206-706-2836. And if you're interested in advertising, shoot us an email, animalworldlive@hotmail.com. All righty, well, we are winding down our visit with Merritt and Beth Clifton from animals24-7.org. Man, we've covered a lot of territory today, but mostly it's just been pretty yucky news. We got anything good we can talk about before we got any good news in the animal world?
Well, we could talk about what's gone on with Miyoko's and Millet Organics, which is at least neutral news and it tastes good.
Oh, okay. Tell us about it.
Well, going back to, say, 210, if you're talking about plant-based butter and cheese, you're basically talking about peanut butter.
Okay, yeah, all right.
That's really the only plant-based butter on the market that tasted good and was widely accepted. A lot of people used it. But Miyoko Shinner in Northern California pretty much invented the category of nut-based dairy products with her artisan cheeses, kind of high-end, made out of almonds and cashews. And she captured a large segment of the cheese market with these things from conventional dairy-based cheeses. And then she went into producing butters. Nut-based butters, Miyoko butter, got to be where you could find it in every supermarket. It was very popular. Around the same time, a company in Idaho called Melt Organic started up making a plant-based butter that had no nuts in it, no glutens. It was supposed to be allergen-free. And it captured a large segment of the market too. And pretty soon you could find both Mel and Miyoko's in every supermarket.
And they were both good.
Both good. They took, and that you could use them just like you would use any other butter. But they took different paths to reaching success. And both companies had bad financial trouble at a certain point because they were growing very rapidly. And Miyoko Shinner brought aboard a bunch of people who had business expertise but didn't like the way she ran things. Eventually threw her out of her own company.
Oh, dear.
That was a very ugly scene. Melt Organics brought in a guy who was a lot more successful in building the company up smoothly without any big public conflicts. Well, about a year after Miyoko Shinner was finally thrown out of her own company after a lengthy legal battle, the people who took it over from her went broke.
Oh, geez.
So on October 7, the company was put up for a creditors auction, the equivalent of a Chapter 7 proceeding. And a lot of people lined up to try to buy it because it was in every supermarket. It did have a good name with the public. Miyoko herself had pretty much been the face of the company and became the face of plant-based alternatives to dairy products. So amid all the speculation on who was going to take it over, Miyoko did a crowdfunding campaign, raised $100,000, put in a bid. Now, all the bid was for at that point was for the name, the brand name, the logos, and the formulas. There was not physical property that went with it because her successors had sold off the factory where the stuff was produced and still went broke. The $100,000 bid was not nearly enough, though. There were also a number of major corporate players in this, and the one that turned out on top was Millet Organics there in Idaho, which will now have both of the major plant-based butter brands in stores, and they will, I think, from what we're hearing, they will keep Miyoko's as the artisan brand and Melt as the basic butter spread brand as it has been, and of course recapitalize the company, and it's probably good things ahead for the plant-based butter and cheese industry. Milt Organics had not gotten into the cheeses, by the way, so their Miyoko's line will be all cheese.
Well, that is really wonderful. And I do think, as a species, human species and consciousness, we will be evolving and moving more into vegetarian lifestyles, vegan lifestyles. And having, you know, plant-based butters and that sort of thing is going to be more and more important.
Makes it a lot easier.
Yeah. Now,
everybody seems to be happy about this deal except for Miyoko. She is very unhappy at her former rival now owning her company. They did invite her to have some kind of a role, but she did not want to be just a spokesperson and a figurehead. Personally, we think this is kind of unfortunate. Reality is what it is, but you know, it's her choice. And the outcome of this will be consumers will have more choice in the supermarket. And we think that's good.
Well, and hopefully it will work out for her too. Because it's obviously a great product. And, you know, she was, you know, really started something wonderful. So, hopefully, it would be wonderful if she can be happy with everything too. But it's nice that the product's going to stay the same.
Yeah, the previous non-dairy products were mainly based on oleo oil, and you may remember that. I remember when I was a boy, my family were always vegetarian, so we had the oleo-based margarine. It didn't really look like butter. I guess it did the job, but it really wasn't very tasty. It was developed actually before World War II, but became popular because of rationing during World War II as an affordable alternative.
Amazing.
But Miyoko is as close to butter as I've ever had. Melt is good too.
All right. So, I mean, nice to know that there are those products that have been created for vegetarian diets. So you don't have to go without that kind of stuff.
And they've caught on with the general public.
Yeah. Yep. All righty. So as Nathan is pointing out, we are getting very close to the top of the hour. So probably time to start winding down. Now, if you want to keep up on the world of animals and everything that's going on, well, there isn't anybody that knows more than Merritt and Beth and their newsletter, animals24-7.org. All you got to do is go to the website and sign up for the newsletter. And then you will get the regular letters coming out and you'll know all this stuff that's going on. And boy, it's always I'm amazed at the amount of information and the research that's gone in and the statistics that you've kept. So, you know, don't just read the headlines, click through and read these emails, because the education is immense. And I really appreciate the work that you guys do. So thank you so much. And I guess the next time we'll be talking to you, you can help us welcome back the Jingle Cats, because that'll be the first Sunday of December. We will see you the first half of the 11 o'clock hour again and catch up on what's going on in the world of animals. And golly, I hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Just remember, everybody, practice moderation in sharing. And remember, with little dogs, be real careful about the rich stuff. And no cooked bones. Raw bones, okay. Cooked bones, not good. And supervise your... Pardon?
But we have a vegan Thanksgiving, so we don't have to worry about the doggies and the bones.
Well, there you go. There you go. That's good.
Anyway.
All right. So next week will be our encore show. We will rerun our energy shifting and energy balancing show with Dr. Nils Rasmussen and Linda Rasmussen. And then in 2 weeks, it's Shelter Rescue Sanctuary and Anything That Helps Our Animal Friends Sunday. So I hope you will join us for that. And of course, we will be having a great time dancing to the Jingle Cats for the month of December, and they'll help us bring in the new year, and we'll be back to love training next year. And hopefully it'll be a much better year for everyone. And wouldn't it be lovely if we could celebrate with like major price drops?
Thank you, Martha. Thank you, Nathan.
All right. Thank you, Barrett and Beth. I really appreciate it. Nathan, thank you. And I trust you can keep everything going, and I'm going to work on, I'm going to order some Manuka honey drops. Anyway, have a wonderful, safe Thanksgiving. I'll talk to you live in 2 weeks. And as always, I leave you with, animals have feelings too. So treat your animal friends better than family. And please always be kind to, open your heart, and share your love with all living things. And we'll be here again next week.